Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Price of Time, The Real Story of Interest by Edward Chancellor is a nonfiction history of finance that examines interest as one of the most important but least understood forces in capitalism. Rather than treating interest simply as the cost of borrowing, Chancellor argues that it is better understood as the price of time, the mechanism that coordinates saving, lending, investment, risk, and economic activity across different horizons. The book traces the long history of interest from ancient lending practices and religious objections to usury through the development of modern financial markets and central banking. It is both an intellectual history and a critique of recent monetary policy, especially the era of ultra-low and negative rates. Chancellor uses historical episodes and modern examples to show how cheap money can distort capital allocation, encourage speculation, weaken productivity, and contribute to financial fragility. The result is a wide-ranging and accessible analysis of how interest shapes economies and societies. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, interest as the price of time rather than simply the price of money. Chancellor begins with a conceptual redefinition that gives the book its title and its organizing logic. Interest is not presented as an incidental banking charge, but as the price attached to the use of time itself. That framing matters because nearly all economic decisions involve delaying consumption, financing production, or comparing present and future value. If interest is the price of time, then it helps explain why savers need compensation, why borrowers must pay for access to capital, and why asset values change when the cost of future money changes. This perspective also links interest to human impatience and uncertainty, two conditions that make lending possible only when there is a return for risk and delay. By starting here, the book moves beyond narrow discussions of rates and inflation and shows interest as a coordinating mechanism in market economies. The point is not merely theoretical once readers understand interest in this broader sense. They can better see why policy decisions about rates have consequences far beyond mortgage costs or bond yields. Secondly, a long history of lending, usury, and changing moral attitudes. A major strength of the book is its historical sweep. Chancellor traces interest from ancient civilizations, where lending at interest already played a role in commerce, through centuries of moral and religious controversy over usury. In earlier periods, charging interest was often associated with exploitation, debt bondage, and social danger, so it was frequently condemned or heavily restricted over time. However, the rise of commercial capitalism made interest more socially acceptable because it was recognized as a necessary reward for parting with capital and bearing risk. This historical arc is important because it shows that attitudes toward interest have never been fixed. They have shifted as economic systems changed, and those shifts reveal deeper tensions between commerce, morality, and social stability. Chancellor uses this background to show that interest has always been embedded in a wider debate about fairness and power, not only efficiency. The book therefore reads as both economic history and a study of how societies negotiate the legitimacy of profit earned through time. Thirdly, how low rates distort capital allocation and encourage financial excess. One of the book's central arguments is that interest rates held too low for too long distort the allocation of capital. When borrowing becomes extremely cheap, projects that would normally look weak or unproductive can appear attractive, and investors are pushed toward riskier assets in search of yield. Chancellor argues that this can inflate asset prices, support speculative behavior, and redirect resources toward businesses or ventures that would not survive under more normal funding conditions. In that environment, capital is not necessarily flowing to its most productive uses. It may instead be trapped in what he sees as forms of financial misallocation. The result is not just speculation in markets, but a broader weakening of economic discipline, because firms and investors are insulated from the cost of bad decisions. This theme connects interest rates to the health of the entire corporate sector and to the quality of growth itself, rather than treating low rates as automatically supportive of prosperity. Chancellor shows how they can undermine the very process by which economies allocate resources efficiently. Fourthly, the connection between easy money, inequality, debt, and zombie companies. Chancellor extends his critique of low rates beyond market distortions to their social and structural consequences. He argues that prolonged cheap credit can increase inequality because it tends to lift asset prices, benefiting those who already own financial and property assets more than wage earners or first-time buyers. At the same time, low rates can encourage households, corporations, and governments to take on more debt, leaving the system more vulnerable when conditions change. The book also emphasizes the rise of zombie companies, firms that survive only because financing remains exceptionally cheap and creditors are unwilling or unable to force restructuring. These companies may preserve the appearance of activity while contributing little to productivity or innovation. In this sense, Ultra-low rates can reduce the economy's dynamism and delay necessary creative destruction. Chancellor's analysis is powerful because it connects financial policy to visible outcomes in labor markets, wealth distribution, and long-term growth. The argument is not simply that low rates are inconvenient, but that they can reshape the structure of capitalism in ways that weaken resilience and fairness. Lastly, why Chancellor sees central bank policy as the hidden driver of modern fragility? The book is also a forceful critique of contemporary central banking, especially the prolonged reliance on near-zero rates and quantitative easing after major financial crises. Chancellor argues that these policies were intended to stabilize economies, but that their side effects accumulated over time and created a more fragile financial system. By suppressing the price of time, central banks may have encouraged excessive leverage, inflated asset bubbles, and conditioned markets to expect permanent support. This policy critique is one reason the book feels timely. It speaks to the transition from decades of falling rates to a new environment of higher borrowing costs and greater inflation pressure. Chancellor does not present this as a temporary technical debate, but as a fundamental question about how capitalism functions when the most important price in the system is manipulated for long periods. The book stands out because it combines historical depth with an explicit judgment about the dangers of policy-driven financial repression. Readers are asked to consider not only what low rates do in the short run, but how they alter incentives, risk-taking, and economic stability over entire cycles. In conclusion, the price of time is especially valuable for investors, economists, policymakers, students of financial history, and general readers who want to understand why interest rates matter so deeply. It is not a narrow textbook on monetary policy, nor is it a simple criticism of central banks. Its broader value lies in showing how interest connects moral history, market pricing, capital allocation, inequality, debt, and long-term economic stability. Readers who have followed debates about inflation, asset bubbles, or financial crises will find the book useful because it places current events in a much longer historical framework. What makes it stand out from many books on money is its ambition to explain interest as a civilizational force rather than a technical variable. Chancellor writes as a financial historian, so the argument is grounded in historical examples, but the implications are clearly contemporary. For anyone trying to understand why modern markets became so dependent on cheap money and why that dependence created fragility, this book offers a sharp and distinctive perspective. If you would like to support Edward Chancellor, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.